Mansoor, Maria, and then Patty.
Leslie. Could Susan give us some numbers as to, so we have a clear idea of what she's talking about? Do you have some statistics or numbers?
Yes, I do, Ray. I sent you a copy, I think, on the email. Maybe they didn't come through clearly. But I think that in view of time and stuff, much as I would love to recite every number to you right now, well, all right. Leslie, do we have time?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Let me just explain. It's male, female, and then combination. That means women and men. 69% male overall.
At WBAI.
14% female. The rest, combinations, equal balance. Hosts, on-air host hours. And I think we all... because I have had these conversations, we all understand there's a problem. And I believe that we just have to focus on it. We have to bring in women. We have to encourage women. We have to train women. You know, it's like women in math.
Okay.
I'm just
doing
my pitch.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Again, if people could introduce themselves and what city they're from.
Margalo Ashley Ferran from Los Angeles, active on the KPFK Bylaws Subcommittee. All of us, I'm sure, who are longtime listeners and supporters are really thrilled to that Pacifica is going to become a membership organization. Now, in order to properly put this into effect, we believe that this board must put into our bylaws that members can vote directly not only for station board members but also for national board directors. We also believe that members must be permitted to propose bylaw changes and that critically only members be able to vote on the bylaws changes and not just the PNB board as in several bylaws drafts. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mansoor. I'm not sure then if it's Mariah or Maria. I'm not sure who's next. Mariah, okay.
Hello, my name is Mansoor from Los Angeles. First and foremost, I would like to have the opportunity to thank all the activists, lab members, who have worked very hard and diligent on all bylaws subcommittees to be thanked on the air. We have worked very hard on this. The other point is, if we allow the foundation's past acts as a guiding light for us for the future, then let us move from a vague language used in the past to a new, concise, and very detailed language to avoid the past mistakes in the new set of bylaws that we're going to be writing for the future. The new bylaw is going to be acting as a constitution for the Pacifica Foundations for the next 20 to 30 years. And to achieve this, I think we need to use a direct democracy participation of listeners in decision-making process. Let us the listeners to be part of a verification means of the new bylaws rather than just the board's decide on this. Let me reiterate Raphael's idea of having a bylaws convention a year after the passage of the bylaws.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
Mariah Gillardin, local advisory board member at KPFA and producer of TUC Radio. I want to take the opportunity to recognize Jane Jackson here. Jane was one of three women arrested in front of Pacifica's doors when she tried to prevent the move of Pacifica to Washington, D.C. As it happened, Cheryl Garner Shaw took a big file box and climbed over her. An escape with records we still haven't seen. And Jane was arrested, but also as a sign of the enormous support that KPFA has and had in the city of Berkeley, the police took the three women around the corner and let them go. The other issue is my very, very old hat is finances of Pacifica. As you know, I was banned from all Pacifica stations for asking about finances. The local advisory board of KPFA just passed a motion out of a sense of deep frustration of not having had any accounting. The KPFA lab recommends that KPFA management suspend all future transfers of shortfall funds to the Pacifica National Office until KPFA and its listener community receives a full accounting of all money spent by the Pacifica National Office between February 1st, 2002 and August 31st, 2002. And, yeah. And I just ran into Dan at the elevator, and he said he had some kind of record, so we will all go to his room after the end of this of this meeting and get to see what he has. What's your room number again?
Instead of that, let me invite everybody after this meeting tonight. There is a public reception for everybody. Maybe Dan will bring the information down there. Down on the first floor, it's open to everybody. There'll be some food and a cash bar, so, you know, please. That's not Dan's room. No.
Am I out of time?
I don't know if you were done.
Am I out of time? Okay. Okay. Well, I would have said something about Democracy Now to make myself really unpopular, but Patty is taking that on.
Again, I just want to thank everybody for keeping to the time limits. It's very helpful.
I'm Patty Heffley from the New York area. I first want to say the motion that was made by the KPFA lab demands that the IPNB, after its special meeting of September 8th, which didn't happen, make public any new draft contract between Pacifica and Democracy Now and open it for comments from the listeners before any vote to approve it. The complete draft should also be made available to all labs for review at the same time when it is presented to the IPNB and should not be signed until three of the five labs approve. What I want to say is that signed. In case people here, if they're not on the internet, they may not know what this contract entails. So I will quickly reiterate. Basically, it's a 5-year contract, no renewal. $440,000, 4-10% increase a year to Democracy Now! Productions Incorporated. It asked for the archives of Democracy Now! To become Democracy Now!'s, the name, 2 times a year, the subscriber list of Pacifica, the paid music rights, the phone bill up to $4,000 a month, the insurance for journalists. Basically, what we are paying for in this case, to me, it's a disposal of assets, which I don't think the IPNB has any right to do. Over time, as production values change, we will be paying for the audio track of a TV program, and I'm not sure what that's going to sound like in, say, for 2 years. This was signed without full board participation by people that had two people, to me, conflicts of interest. One just quick thing, Peter Frank, who was a former president of Pacifica and a lawyer, stated that the possible deleterious effects and ramifications of such a contract are manifold, and we must pay attention to what that is. And so I just like people to really think about this, the national board to really think about this contract and what it means for Pacifica, because there really was nobody watching the hen house.
Okay, Miguel is next. I have Miguel, and then again, I'm sorry, I can't read the handwriting. I think it's Bill somebody. And then Leslie Radford. Miguel? Sorry. Miguel, Bill, Leslie. People could start. People, you know you've signed up for the list, so maybe you can move to this side of the room.
Hi, my name is Miguel Maldonado, and I'm from the New York area. And local ambassador board chairperson for WBAI. And this afternoon I heard a lot about diversity and at some point I thought was listening the Democratic Convention and the way that people were speaking, but it was a Pacifica meeting. But I just want to address the issue of that I know, and I would like to call the attention to the national board members, the issue of race and Pacifica, and how I think that we are dealing with it, which is, I think that, I don't know about all the fields, maybe that we can have a whole discussion about all the issues, but when it comes to race, I would say that Pacifica Board and the whole Pacifica family is handled that issue really bad. And there's, it's still, I know that I live in a society which is black and white, and I refuse to live in a society which is black and white, because for what I confront, I don't fit any categories because I belong to a community. But at the same time, I try to develop work where I can work with people who I think are brothers and sisters, but sometimes you guys clue us on how, because the way that you think. And I would say that my experience dealing with different people and how we accommodate people who not agree on certain issues, like I thought that we have Pacifica is basically a challenge to the United States government, because the United States government don't want to hear that voice. And we say, no, this is the voice that everybody needs to listen. And somehow that is a kind of something that you would like to hear, because it's a challenge. But at the same time, internally, in the way that we deal with contradiction, I think that sucks sometimes, really terrible, and exclude people and trying to shut down people. And I think that, you know, it's like, my goodness, this is the people that are supposed to challenge to the government and criticizing the government sometime, somehow or another, using a model that is very similar in the way that people got shut down. And we just come from an experience that we have to be fight because excluding people. And I think that it's not that much different nowadays. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's Bill, Leslie Radford, then Adrian.
Thank you, Leslie. I am Bill Somebody. Thank you. Yeah, Bill Schmidt is my name. And an effort was made to interview me in November of 1989 when I was living for the 1980s in the country of El Salvador. And I got a call from WBAI, asked the morning after the Jesuit priests were killed for me to give an eyewitness view to the goings-on of El Salvador at the time. And I was so bummed out by the confluence of interests of our government and and the churches that I denied the interview. I did not want to speak. And so it's taken me really 13 years to come around. And thank you for the sanity that you bring to analysis and to the media. One of the men I worked with, Father Ignacio Ayacuria, who was director at the Catholic University at the time, said that the United States is the most violent nation on earth. And he put a finger on the connection between arms and drugs and politics. And he was murdered for that. And I want to just tell the board to have courage in these days because that spirit is alive. And since Pacifica has steadfastly tried to work and stand for the truth, you're going to be facing those kind of odds. But I want to just, 12 years later, thank you for your sticking with it. And I know it's been rough this past time in the reformation of Pacifica, but you're the only sane voice that we have speaking to our people. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Leslie. I'm the other Leslie. I'd like to speak to you today about the importance of power going to local community stations, and I want to make sure that that issue is addressed. You hold in your hands a very precious and vital gift. Precious in that it's one of the few things that may keep the human race from its seeming desire to self-destruct. Vital in the sense that it is a living thing, and it changes, and it grows, and it evolves. And it is time for it to evolve. The listeners in this room, and I look around and I don't include myself in this number at all, but many of them have spent 2 and 3 and 5 and 7 and 12 and 20 years of their lives in this struggle. They have earned the right to their local stations. They have earned the right to control them. Not just with giving dollars. These are not listener sponsors. These are listener activists who've given blood and sweat and tears to the station. If you let Pacifica go to us, you let Pacifica grow. Not only that, but these people have learned. They've learned how to make Pacifica responsive to local needs and local constituencies. If you, the time has come for you to give us what you hold, that precious and vital gift. In the next war, it will be countered by thousands of local actions by neighborhoods. Let the community stations lead those neighborhoods. A central government speaking to another central government is not going to end that war. If you give the power of Pacifica to local stations, you make it possible for Pacifica to lead the peace. Thank you.
Thank you. With Adrian, then Marianne Martinez and Rhonda.
My name's Adrian Labby. I'm from KPFA. I would like to thank all of you for being here and sitting here and listening and talking to each other in public. I'd like to acknowledge all the people who scrounged up the money to get here, and I wish that if you had to think hard about where the money would come from, you'd stand up, and if some of your friends funded you or a listener group funded you, would you all please stand up? Raise your hand or wheel forward if you're Jane Jackson. And thank you. Thank you for coming. I would like to call the board's attention to a flyer put out by the National Ad Hoc Committee, Anti-Racism Committee. And we've been doing work on the race and nationality resolution. We have time on the board to give a full presentation later. This has to do with the bylaws. There are a few provisions, and one is in the preamble. We ask that you discuss the need to include diversity in the government, in the staff, and so on. In the composition of governance bodies, we would ask that there be a clause talking about goals for each board being half women, half people of color at least, and substantial diversity on other levels. That the duties of the Pacifica board and the local boards are to see that the staff and programming is diverse and consistent with geographical diversity and have an atmosphere that promotes diversity. We have real specific language. We're not trying to talk to you about any particular drafts, but we'd like this kind of language included in any draft that you choose. And I'll make sure that you all get a copy of the handout. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Marianne, then Rhonda, then Jane Jackson.
Hi, my name is Marianne Martinez from Houston. And I want to say this to the board, that as you begin to look over the bylaws, please remember that what you're, this is similar to believing in God. You know, you have to have faith. And so as you look this stuff over, you know, remember that who you represent, and have faith in what you're doing, and have faith in the people you represent. There's a couple of things that I think you should think about as you review those these bylaws. I think that you should closely examine four areas, and these areas are conflict of interest, nepotism, executive sessions, and specific language that is written into the bylaws. conflict of interest pertains not just to business matters, but also to situations like individuals that are running for political office. That presents a conflict of interest, and that should be looked at very closely. Nepotism can, if there's people in our governance structure who are related to each other, it can skew community representation. So please think about that. Executive sessions should be very seldom used. If you want a democratic Pacifica, you need to open up those all sessions to the community. And really, I would say just do away with the executive sessions. You know, the truth will set you free. And just one more thing, and that is that please look very closely at the language and the wording in the bylaws before you approve anything. We know only too well here in Houston how easy it is to take one phrase and twist it and distort it to attack individuals. So please, please do that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we have a number more people. We want to try and get everybody in. So again, we're going to really stick to this 2-minute time. We have Rhonda, then Jane, then Carolyn Burden.
Hi, my name is Rhonda Garner, and I'm a native Houstonian, a KPFT listener for probably 28 years. I want to start on a positive note and say that despite all of the turmoil and dissension in Houston, the radio is better. What we're hearing on the air is better, but there is still a big problem. And that problem is that we do not have dissident representation on this PNB. I would also like everyone to notice that George Barnstone is not sitting here listening to the listener comments, nor does he in our local lab meetings. I would have called for and petitioned and worked hard for his removal. But I knew elections were around the corner, and I didn't want to do that. So I sought my own resolution the second time I saw Janice Blue shut down. And so I sent a message to all lab members asking them to answer some questions so I could understand their motivation and get a better idea of who they are, because this, there is now in Houston, there's no process. This is an elitist group. Teresa Allen did not answer me. George Barnstone did not answer me. I would also like to say that if indeed Charles Smith is the person you have in mind to put here, there is a far better selection of people, such as Marianne Martinez, who has worked hard in every governance committee meeting, elections. Ted Weisgau would be a choice, okay? Rick Potthoff could be a choice. We need some dissident representation on this board. And I know this to be true because I've gone to every lab meeting. I've only missed one. And I watch the way they vote. And I want to tell you that George Barnstone is one of the most disrespectful men I know. And I know that there are some people out here who don't know me that might like to say the same thing. But I have the reputation that I have because I have to speak in this way to be heard. Dan Jones, where have you been? I asked you to babysit my kids while I did all the committee work. Only place I ever see you is on the chat room.
Rhonda.
Okay? So, you put Charles Smith up here.
Again, let me...
And just so you know, Deb Shapto agrees with every word I've said. I consulted her with her beforehand.
Okay.
Deb.
Rhonda, please.
One more great comment.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Deb,
I think we
voted
got the point.
Not to grandfather and set a great example for our community.
Okay. Thank you, Rhonda.
Leadership.
Thank you very much. Jane Jackson. Oh, are you Marie? Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't realize who you were. This is Marianne, I guess, from way at the beginning.
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay. Marianne Dumont from WBAI
right.
Signal.
2 minutes.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to address, Leslie, your concerns earlier today about identity politics. One of the things that we have found working in the Unity Caucus together is that by bringing in many diverse voices who bring in their own struggles, their own individual needs, their own voices, and through much exchange and ultimately consensus. We believe that we transcend the problems of identity politics, and that not only that, when people feel that they have an actual place in the decision-making process, we find that there is a more willingness to cooperate with each other, and also it brings more people from each of the communities. We've had people from the youth community, we've had people, the Unity Caucus meetings, I wish the board looked like the meetings that we have, and I would just like to urge you to really consider that it's worth the effort. It is really worth the effort. And it ties in with what so many people have said today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have Jane Jackson, Carolyn. Where's Jane? Oh, Jane's over here. Is this mic on? Yes. Okay. And then Carolyn, and then Earl Gerhardt after Carolyn.
My name is Jane Jackson. I come from the original listening area, and I've been a listener since 1949. I would like to correct, say thank you for the compliments, but I must correct them. I was incarcerated, and so I'd like to direct my remarks to all those who are incarcerated, be they in prison, in hospitals, nursing homes, or locked into their own homes, and to let you know, Mumia, that you are here, whether you're here in person or not, and to say thank you to Dick Gregory for his crucial vote at the beginning of this process, to say I hope I see you in Washington, and thank you for always being with us when it comes to the issue of civil rights. Why Pacifica does not understand that it is in violation of many civil rights laws in the way it operates is beyond me, but I know that tokenism is not the answer. It's not the answer in cases of race, gender, or disability. It is people who understand and who choose to work together. And I am not going to stop until Pacifica is back the way it was when Lou Hill conceived it. Thank you.
This is KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York, and WPFW in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. I'm Carolyn Burden from the WBAI area, and I'd like to make a few remarks about accountability and elections. I'm speaking especially against what has been called, I think falsely, the inclusion model. And, pardon? Yes, I'm calling it the appointed seats model.
People not interrupt each other. Carolyn's at the mic. Let her speak.
I think that under this model, anyone wanting to vote would have to choose an identity and would be restricted to voting for, if I understand properly, two candidates in only two groups. They would have to choose a group, female, Latino, African American, and so on. One of the questions I have, of course, is who decides who these groups are? And the other question is that to choose an identity, to force people to choose an identity, is to ignore the fact that under single transferable voting, they would be able to vote for as many candidates as there are seats. They would be diluted terribly otherwise. Thank you. Yes. Your vote is going to be diluted. It's a Trojan horse. And it is an attempt essentially to take over the governing boards of the local stations by the same people who would be choosing these so-called constituents. If the stations and the people involved in the Unity Caucus, who have done wonderful outreach, would simply direct that to what we're about, which is the air, and do programming to attract listeners, I think we would solve the problem. We would have the Pacifica that we really need. Thank you.
Okay. Earl and then Mike.
Earl Gerhardt from Houston, and I want to direct my comments to Carol Spooner's initial address, where she made the statement that she wasn't sure if bringing all these five reports together, the problems that it had caused, was worth it. And what I want to do is thank Carol, and I want to thank the rest of this board, because it is worth it. What this has done is opened up and brought many people into the process, learning to fight for what they believe in and to be a part of a bigger cause. The problems that it's uncovered were there. this has been an opportunity for us to heal them. I want to thank you for that and thank all the labs and all the people who have worked so hard in this process.
Okay, we have Michael, David Moore, and Andrew Fishman, and then there'll be three more after them. So we're nearing the end of this period.
Okay, I wanted to ask Leslie, are we going to have comments during the station reports, or is that going to happen?
With respect to my
comments right now, I'd like to first of all state that with respect to the KPFT, I'm a member of the KPFT. My name is Michael Pimentel. I'm a member of the KPFT lab, also a member of the KPFT Governance Bylaws Committee, and a member of the KPFT Elections Committee. I want to say with respect to the work the KPFT committee did, it is incomplete. There is one particular very unique section that I'd like to point you to. It's the same section which was objected to earlier. It's a unique solution in respect. It's under the diversity goals in Article 3, Section 2, I believe. It is actually Article 4, Section 2. It stipulates a committee of inclusion, which would essentially serve part of the ascertainment function of the local advisory board in terms of determining what communities will be served or what communities are underserved. I'd also like to say, generally speaking, I don't endorse the KPFT bylaws proposal. After consideration, I believe that the KPFK unity proposal probably offers some of the most strategic and interesting solutions to what we've seen go on, thus far. I've been struggling against a lot of exclusionary behavior, and I'd just like to say that I think that that's, from within Pacifica, a reflection of the society around us, and I think we always need to struggle against that and find ways to unite rather than divide ourselves. So thank you very much.
Okay, so we have David Moore, then Andrew Fishman, then Chandra Hopner.
Hi, I'm David Moore, listener from. Thank you. Thanks very much, listener from Montana by streaming audio, and I bring what I've discovered in this Pacifica community—a certain legacy that carries respect for the mission because of my connection to the founders, and I'm always moved by how deeply. That respect is carried throughout this community. I'd like to speak, just all we have is briefly, to the perceived dichotomy between governance and programming. We're at a historic moment for Pacifica, and I'd like to suggest that many of the crises, decade by decade, throughout Pacifica have been towards this moment of democratization. That indeed it's worth the experiment, that we've had a consistent problem with centralization versus listener ownership. And it's time, I think, for moving away from what was indeed an elite foundation of Pacifica towards a democratic experiment. That's a very broad and important context. Along those lines, it comes down to the governance versus programming issues. Who's going to own the governance of programming? And there are two particulars that line up with that issue that I'd like to address. One is program councils and program directors and their contests. And then if I can get to it in these 2 minutes, a brief attention to the constituency model question. Basically, I think it's a false dichotomy that Pacifica is a process of working through these very frustrations and paradoxes. Pacifica, there's been incredibly eloquent invocations of democracy and faith even this evening. And I think that the way Lou Hill envisioned the movement across the paradox from ownership of the station to voice on the air is the faith to make that leap together. the faith to trust that we can dialogue enough to get in each historic moment a possibility for action. Now, to swing entirely towards listener ownership or to swing entirely towards an individual program director or programmer being entirely in charge of the station is obviously not the solution. And it's dialogue that can get us to that middle road. I think in this democratization process, we're swinging towards the wider ownership. And I'd like to suggest I'm in no position to defend the constituency model in its details, but I think that the notion that programming can do it instead of governance doing it is a false dichotomy, that indeed we have to talk through that very issue to reach out into the communities in the way that the constituency model is suggesting. And in fact, Carolyn Burden just acknowledged that value of that process. And I think that's moving towards the governance on a wider base. There's much more to say, but thanks very much.
Thank you. Okay, folks, we have four more people. We're going to go a little more than the hour that we've set aside for this, but I want to take all four so then everyone will have had their moment. Please try and keep it really to no more than 2 minutes. Andrea? It's Andrea, Chandra, Dan Jones, and Errol Maitland.
I'm Andrea Fishman, and I'm from WBAI. And I would like to echo these statements tonight that have been made by David Adelson and Leslie Kagan. I think that it is important that the foundation be constructed more like a commons and more like with the public voice participating in its decision-making process. I think that Leslie Kagan's remarks that we should have immediately network-wide discussions about how what our vision is of Pacifica and how we construct construct ourselves internally, how we make decisions internally, is a very, very important point. I think these discussions should be made a part of our process, and that these discussions should be regular and systematic, and they should be carried out over the air. It's imperative that we be included, that the listening communities be included in the governance of this network. This is what will preserve the network. This is what will preserve our voice. This is exactly what will make Pacifica a part of the peace and justice movement. An informed community, this discussion will enable the culture of participating democracy to both proliferate within the network and also not only over the air, but on the ground in our communities. The world is on fire. We are being deprived of our voice right now. There is a serious effort out there to silence us and to silence dissent. And yet, right now, in our own process, I am afraid we are losing our impact and our chance to have an effect on it. What has been decided about the way that bylaws will be completed, the way the bylaws discussions will be completed, does not, in fact, include listener input, listener discussion, or listener review. It really does not. There are weaknesses in the bylaws right now. They do not clearly include mandates against government funding. The Democracy Now! Contract has a stipulation. I will finish shortly. That ties us into government. That will tie us into government funding. And unless the community is allowed to make decisions about this, we will not be able to protect our voice. We are being deprived of the right to protect our voice. So I seriously urge the committee, the board, to reconsider its decisions and include us in the final decisions of the bylaws.
Okay, we have two more people. And again, three more people. Chandra, Dan Jones, and Errol Maitland. Chandra.
Good evening. I'm Chandra Houtman from the KPFA listener area. A lot of people have spoken in support of the KPFA election model, but I'm here to support the KPFA outreach model, which resulted in a KPFA station board that has 50% representation of people of color and 50% representation by women. This outreach model was developed by the board, the listeners, the supporters, the volunteers, and the staff, the listener supporters. We all helped create this model. We also helped create a community needs assessment process that resulted in outreach throughout the Signal area by 12 community meetings, a listener-initiated survey of what the listeners wanted from KPFA that resulted in a published report that has been distributed widely, including to all the IPNB members and all the managers from all the stations, nominations and candidates' nights, on-air publicity of candidates and meetings. And I would also like to acknowledge the fact that through staff, management, and program council and board cooperation, programming has been expanded and diversified at KPFA to increase outreach to communities such as Asian Pacific Islanders, hip-hop youth, Middle Easterners, an Islam program, and Guns and Butters to reach different audiences. And we've also initiated a new model where we have new programmings created in perpetuity so that more programs can be rotated in. Thank you.
Hi, it's Dan Jones from Houston. First of all, I'd just like to say it's great to see the board here in Houston. It was a year ago since you were last here, and this is perhaps a less interesting board meeting, but I think we can all agree that it's a much more enjoyable meeting. What I'd like to say is that I'm very amazed by the process of the bylaws process at each of the stations. I think it worked pretty well, and you've got a lot of different proposals in front of you. And I'd just like to call your attention to one balance in the bylaws that I'd like you to consider, and that's the balance between the authority of the paid station managers and the rights of the board and of the listeners. And I think we all suffered through management that was both unaccountable and politically hostile to the purpose of this foundation. But just because we have management at all the stations now which is politically simpatico with the purposes of the foundation, it doesn't mean that they won't become unaccountable. And I dump on Dwayne a lot, but I just want to say that the best decisions that Dwayne has made, like getting a newscast, have happened with full participation by the widest community. And the worst decisions that Dwayne has made, like the decision tonight not to broadcast this meeting on his own radio station, were made by himself and himself alone. And I think it's a very useful lesson about accountability at all stages and at all times in the management of the station. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And then finally, Errol. Yeah, Errol Maitland.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Fearless Leader, for for this opportunity. I'm happy to be back in Houston, and I'm taking this time to say that as a co-founder of WBIX, we are Pacifica. We intend to continue to expand and to push and to drag and to cajole Pacifica to live up to its expectations and its mission. I also want to extend, and this is why I'm really here, I want you all to extend a hearty hello to one of our colleagues who is in crisis, who is in pain, who literally needs a new neck. I'm talking about Anthony Sloan, who has to undergo an operation to replace the vertebrae in his neck. And you know, I think we need to throw a good party for Anthony Sloan nationally so that his recovery will be speedy and that he will be comfortable in his recovery. So, Anthony, I just want to say hang on, brother. Get well soon. And speed of recovery. And this is for you.
And many people know Anthony Sloan to be the engineer for Democracy Now!
Everybody who doesn't know, Anthony is the engineer for and music maestro, as Amy calls him, for Democracy Now!
And he's a longtime producer at WBAI and arts director emeritus. what is it, emeritus? I'll say that.
Arts director,
okay.
Emeritus.
Thank you. Thank you.
Produces at EAI.
Thank you. And again,
concludes this section of the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting, the community comment section.
Kind words to Anthony. And hopefully he'll be joining us to these meetings again soon.
And you are listening
to
KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFA in Berkeley, WPFW in Washington, D.C., and WBAI in New York.
And for, you know, a lot of very, very thoughtful comments, food for more thought for us to chew on. So we now turn back to the bylaws. I know it's going to seem a little choppy, but
they have decided to continue discussions done earlier today about the bylaws in the first meeting of this weekend. So that will be for the balance of this meeting.
Again, I want to thank everybody who's listening tonight to this live broadcast from the Houston of the meeting of the Interim National Pacifica Board. We are in the middle of Article 3. Actually, we're still near the beginning of Article 3. Article 3, Section 2, which has to do with the rights of members. I'm not going to recap what we did earlier because it would take another hour to recap it. So we're just going to keep forging ahead. So what we're trying to do in each section is to see where there's non-controversy, where there's agreement. We're obviously, in some sections, we're looking for the principle or the most important part of this, even if there are fine details to work out later. And we're trying to identify where there are controversial issues or different perspectives, what the sense of this body is, where we are with this. So I'm on page 5. At the bottom of page 5 of 52, that's why we needed more time this weekend, of the small grid, the large grid, I think it's page 7. Okay, so thanks all of you for being so patient with us. So those of you listening, it may be a little hard to follow some of this, but please bear with us. So we have the rights of the members, and under that section 3 in Article 2, the first point is election. That is the election of directors. And in some of the proposals we have before us, it's simply, point A is simply on the election. In some versions, it's the election and removal or the election and recall of directors. What did I miss?
Or in the KPFA proposal, it's election of delegates to the local board
and the removal.
And removal of them and directors. And in the Fertig proposal, it's election and recall of local advisory board members.
Okay, so this might be a little complicated. Somebody want to take a stab at it? David? David? And what's the PAC proposal on this one? You're going to have to go to the mic. You're going to have to go to the mic, please, or point us to where we are.
It's on Section 3, Voting Rights, and it says to elect all station boards, to ratify all amendments, and powers of recall.
Okay, but we're only on election right now. Okay, we'll try and work all these things in. But okay, so David, Fertig.
I just want to clarify the proposal that I forwarded under Model C seeks to provide an election and recall power. The construct was basically intended to create a national board that was an elected and accountable national board that was subject to recall by the people that elected them, because the national board members would be elected to the local, local advisory board, that people from the local advisory board would be then selected by the local advisory board to the national board, but they would, of course, still be LAB members and susceptible to recall as LAB members. Recall of a person as an LAB member would take them off the national board. That way you have the ability to both have people elected from a board with which they have had to work, through which they have demonstrated their concept, their cooperation, their commitment, and their skill, and their collegiality, frankly, and then on the national board demonstrating those skills or not, and if not, then being pulled off by the very people that elected them,
the lab itself could then pull these people down. Now, the reason it's going through the lab is because this, in this proposal, is considered a preliminary step, a way to create an environment in which the local boards, essentially, which would be the committees of lab members from the national board, these local bodies would manage the station. They would have a sense of what it's going to really take to grow and evolve local governance. Instead of trying to develop a fully tuned, fine instrument that's ever been played before, it instead seeks to create a dynamic whereby we have local advisory boards. Previously, the local advisory board sent people to the national board. What this says is, let's try that again, only this time, let's make sure there's accountability where they can be pulled off. So that's what C is. I can go on. I mean, as some may recall, there was problems where the local advisory board in Los Angeles sought to remove representatives it had sent to the national board because they had failed to carry forth the wishes of the local advisory board. The national board refused to accept those removals and kept them on. So this seeks to deal with that issue and also to create an evolution, an environment where things can evolve.
Okay. Carol?
I think the most important reason for me why the local boards should elect the directors is I don't think those directors are actually functionally accountable to anybody if the electing body is the directly the listeners and only the listeners can recall them. Theoretically, if you elect somebody, you can recall them, but you've got to remember that out of the 100,000 listeners in the signal area, a certain number of them will become members and a certain number of them will vote, and somewhere around 100 of them will be paying close attention to what's going on the national board. The rest of our listeners trust us to do a good job of watching the national board. They delegate that duty to people who they trust to do it. That's what they elect you to do when you get on that board. And they go on with their lives. They're activists, they're family people, they're business people, they're whatever they are. They don't want to spend, and they can't spend their time watchdogging the national board. Not only that, it's very, very difficult sometimes to understand the subtleties of what goes on this board, or any board, unless you're very closely involved and watching what's going on. You don't know that they've gone astray. But the local board does. If we've got a properly functioning foundation where the local board is integrated with the national board and working together on committees, and local board is implementing national policies and informing national policies, the local board can hold these directors accountable. But if it's only the listeners who can have that right and that power, it's very difficult to inform and mobilize them. So I think it's very important that both the listeners and the local board be able to recall them, and that comes through the local board election.
I must be honest. Okay, I'll let somebody else speak. I was just going to say I'm a little confused about how to proceed here because we have very different presentations here. Some are, in terms of the different proposals before us. Some are much more, some speak to many different issues, some speak to just one issue, really. So I'm a little confused about our process. Yeah, Rob.
Yeah, I don't mean to be disputatious, but it seems to me
that... I think that mic isn't on over there.
Hello?
Yes, you got it now.
I don't mean to be disputatious, but if it's a good idea to have democratic elections for the local advisory boards, and if that's going to create accountability, it's not clear to me how we can say that democratic elections for governing board will not produce accountability. And I'd like a little bit of clarification about how we make that distinction.
I think that it's very difficult to be accountable to 5,000 people, 100 of whom are watching you. So if we're going to elect a local board that then has to work together, say it's, 15 people or 18 people in the local station area, we can afford a few ringers, you know? We can make a mistake or two. That board will work it out. They'll file off the rough edges, and they will choose from among their members national board members, three, two, however many we end up with per signal area, and they'll watch them very carefully and hold them accountable. But the local listeners can also remove them.
Okay. Yeah, Marion?
In terms of David.
Marion Barry.
We need this mics. Whoever's doing the mics, just put them all up.
Hello? Marion Barry speaking.
Yeah.
In terms of the removal process that David spoke of, are there standards for removal?
I can tell you the law says that if you elect somebody, you can remove them without cause.
What my model provides, and I think a lot of them do, is that there is a relatively high bar of a two-thirds vote
David
to remove somebody. And there's also a due process provision whereby to remove somebody requires the standard amount of notice, such as would be required for a regular meeting, in this instance 30 days, with notice as to the grounds for removal and an opportunity to be heard.
Is there an appeal process?
I'm sorry?
That beyond the local advisory board, suppose a person disagrees that it's really become personal rather than programmatic and philosophical, it just becomes a personal issue. Somebody doesn't like somebody because they don't speak the right way. How do you avoid that kind of personality conflict?
Well, indeed, and that's why the suggestion of a two-thirds vote would be required. If there is due process, 30 days notice, an opportunity to address the alleged bases for removal, and then the two-thirds vote, that's an awfully high hurdle, and I dare say that if it was a frivolous or personal dispute, that would have to be surfaced through that process. But there has to be a way to allow that to happen, and there's a bar, but it's a high bar, but not too high a bar. It's just an estimate of what it would take.
Now, Carol, you spoke.
I want to just interrupt for a second here. Like I said, in this section right now that we're addressing, there are several items here. One has to do with who the members vote for. Do they vote just for the local boards? Do they vote directly for the national board? This at question. Then there's a question about recall. Right, so if we can try and separate those and speak about, I know they're related to each other, but everything in the bylaws is related to each other. If we could try to, maybe we need some just freewheeling discussion for a little bit, but we're going to have to focus. Right?
Indeed, Peerless Leader, if I could, relative to Rob Robinson's remarks earlier, in regards to direct election of the national board members, by electing people to the local advisory board, you're electing people that will be the leadership of the local station. In effect, because they will then be selecting the people that, by sending them to the national board, become the local station committee. That then, as a group of however many in numbers, say four, five, or six, however, at the beginning, become the management group. These are the people directly elected by the listeners. The thing is that of those people elected on the local advisory board, say, for example, 24, that group of 24 people then name the group that becomes both local management and national board member, and they're directly accountable to both the listeners and the local advisory board, as well as the national board itself.
Leslie, Carol spoke of the listeners can remove members
again,
from the national
Jerry.
Board, and the LAO members can do that. I mean, how does that work, Carol? How does
I'll explain it to you, Marion. If the listeners elect local board members,
right,
they can recall them under the law. And if they have recalled them from the local board, that automatically recalls them from the national board because they're serving a dual role. They're elected to the local board, which then sends them to the national board. They're serving on both boards concurrently.
So you recall them from the national board and the local board, too. So they're not
if you recall somebody from – if the listeners elect from the local board member – and they recall that local board member, they're automatically off the national board.
I understand that.
And then, but there are two methods of recall, because if the local board elected them, the national board director, they can also recall them. I should say that...
but the listeners can't... I understand clearly the local board, the advisory board doing that. But then, if the local board refuses to do that, how does the listeners get involved?
This is WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFK in Los Angeles, and KPFA in Berkeley.
You'd need to get. Okay. And the foundation would have to hold a recall election.
And would there be public discussions on it?
Pardon me? Of course. Oh, yes. I mean, you can't mount a recall election without stating your reasons and doing it in writing.
know what I mean by that, Carol, is would you have a formal meeting where the accused have a chance to answer the accusation?
I would,